Good evening. I appreciate the chance to sit here and have a conversation with you all. I'm from the country of Zimbabwe, and I've been in the United States now since 1974. And I can tell you that I've been involved in a lot of movements ever since. I have not seen this level of public interest, public involvement, public emotion, such as has been directed to this issue. The public, people see something in this war. There's something about this war that is provoking a kind of visceral reaction. I don't know what it is. You know, it's one thing to just oppose something. And I was involved in the anti-apartheid movement in this country, a lot of other stuff, and people get emotional. I haven't seen this kind of intensity. I think people have a deeper sense of justice sometimes than they get credit for. This issue, I think, has touched that nerve, that sense of justice, that this issue is about justice. There's something unjust about this, that the biggest power on earth makes a unilateral decision to get out and just attack a small country on the most specious of all reasons. And I think people see right through that. So we should give the public credit for that. I really wanted to talk about a couple of things in terms of the impact of this war. I think I don't think anybody in this room needs a lecture as to the plethora of reasons why this war is nonsense. It has no basis in rationality, no basis in reason. It simply, at every level, it fails to meet the test as to why countries should go to war. So let's not even go to that at all. I want to talk about an area of this war that is seldom discussed, which is its impact on the democracy project in developing countries. Right now, in the so-called war against terrorism, the United States is going around the world putting money in places, putting money in countries like Kenya, for example, because Kenya was the site of those two bombings. One bombing was in Tanzania, one in Kenya. Both countries now have become recipients of U.S. foreign aid. Kenya, as some of you do, those of you who follow international news closely, Kenya has just gone through an election after about 21 years of a brutal pro-U.S. Government that this country was simply not in a hurry to pressure to democratize. So there's this new wind in Kenya, this new opportunity to move the country into a direction where people feel invested in the system and that there's a semblance of democracy, at least. What's going to happen is not unlike what happened in the Cold War. I think all of you know that one of the reasons democracy was very difficult to achieve in developing countries was that the United States and its friends and its stooges in those countries essentially got into pacts, they got into agreements. Africa, Asia, Latin America produced what is called political entrepreneurs. These are individuals that got into politics because it was good business, frankly. And they could get in power in places like the Congo in Zaire. Mobutu Sese Seko, you know, that guy, they would say, listen, the United States, you know, you're involved in this struggle with the Soviet Union. We can help you fight against communism. You can use our territory as a staging ground for your anti-communist activities. In return, you may not raise issues. You may not call us on human rights issues. So they got into this quid pro quo. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. And the United States says, OK, fine. Geez, you know, communism is the preeminent issue here. We don't care about civil rights or human rights. So we're going to prop up those governments that at least assure us that we can use their countries as a buffer against as a bulwark against Soviet adventurism. So that was the deal. South Africa was viewed as such. The Shah of Iraq was viewed as such. Marcos in the Philippines was viewed as such. In Zaire, of course, it was Mobutu Sese Seko. These governments had something in common. They were extremely brutal regimes. And they did this in the name of fighting, combating communism, and with the overt support of the Western countries. What we're seeing right now is a repeat of that. That in the name of this war against communism, that the United States is now going back to these countries and saying, okay, we'll give you money, help us track down terrorists. Kenya is getting money, as I said, and Tanzania is getting money. Turkmenistan is getting money, and Tajikistan is getting money. And those governments are completely allergic to democracy. They're not friends of human rights. But the only qualification is that they've bought into this anti-terrorism war. So this money that's going in there, your tax money and my tax money that are being sent to these countries, purportedly to fight terrorism, is money that is going to be directed, not necessarily terrorists. These guys are corrupt as hell. They don't really care. It's going to be, those guns will be directed towards internal enemies. So that in Kenya, I've already lost hope. This new window, this new opportunity for democracy in Kenya is now threatened because the government now is being handed wads of cash with no accountability that we're quite sure that that money is going to be used in part to suppress voices that are demanding democracy, pluralism, and workers' rights, and so forth and so forth. So that's the price that people are going to pay in other parts of the world. In this country, of course, it doesn't need to be said that there's a stealth campaign going on. This guy is waging wars on two fronts. He's waging the war in Iraq, and as somebody alluded to here, he's also waging a war against working people. It's quite telling that on the eve of the war, on Sunday before those guns went off in Baghdad, the Senate Republicans were pushing the tax cut for wealthy people. In the past couple of weeks, they've pushed for deep cuts in veterans' benefits. Senior citizens on Medicare now, they've made it difficult for senior citizens to appeal adverse decisions on Medicare, you know, in terms of home care and some of the other stuff. So these guys are passionate. They know who their friends are and they know who their enemies are. And the enemies are working people. Protestations about, you know, we care for the people, you know, support for the troops and so forth, notwithstanding, it's pretty clear what they're doing. So they're using this war. The public attention now is so fixated on this war that this is a chance for them in a kind of stealth way to push an agenda that has always defined their ideology, which is a campaign against working people. So that's what's going on here. And the challenge for us, and I'll conclude by appealing to everybody in here, the challenge for us right now is that in these demonstrations we've seen new people. On Sunday the 16th, I just went around and just talking to people. It's just amazing how many people are for the first time coming to a rally. I spoke to an Arab woman, a Muslim woman, who said to me, she says, I'm here for the, you know, I said, how do you do this all the time? She says, no, I'm just here for the first time. It's my first time. My husband let me. And it's, a lot of these folks are in kind of these traditional relationships and traditional families and so forth. And, you know, and I said, how come he didn't come? He says, oh, no, he's too scared. He's afraid to come. She was there for the first time. So we have this new, so the challenge for us really is, you know, how do we move beyond Iraq? This really is now about, it's not about Iraq anymore. This is about what do we do with all these new folks that are now entering a movement, so to speak, that are now entering political consciousness. What do we do with them? How do we move beyond Iraq into saying, you know what, you know, here's something else we have in common. The Bill of Rights is under attack. What do we do to protect our Bill of Rights in the United States? What do we do to protect workers' rights? What do we do to defend the environment against corporate abuses? You know, what do we do to support women's rights? What do we do to support affirmative action and so forth and so forth and so forth? So that there's a real opportunity here for a new movement to really coalesce around the range of issues that everybody sitting in this room cares about. The challenge for us is how do we navigate that? And so we need to be very, very careful how we do that. I'm not going to sit here and lecture to people how to do that. I think every organization has its own style and its own approaches to organizing. But I say to you that this is a real opportunity. And frankly, as the New York Times said, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, there is no other superpower. The only other superpower right now that has just emerged is called world public opinion that is going to hold these guys in the White House, these guys in Washington in check. We're going to be the counterweight to this reactionary force in Washington. And I think we have to stand up and meet the challenge. Thank you very much.